Well, thank you very much for that introduction, Mary. And can I also thank you on behalf of Blake Dawson Waldron as the sponsors of today's lunch. I'm a great supporter of CEDR and the work that it does, and I'm pleased to see it getting the support of companies like your own to make sure that these sorts of opportunities continue here in Brisbane. Can I acknowledge Greg Meek, the Executive Director, and Rod Besley, the State President of CEDR? And can I congratulate them? I think, like all organisations, CEDR's had its ups and downs, and there was certainly a time a couple of years ago, quite recently really, where I think it looked like perhaps it wasn't enjoying the support that it needed, but that's certainly turned around, and I congratulate the current executive. I think you're doing a great job of creating opportunities for people to be talking about the things that really matter here in Queensland. I've been asked today to talk a little bit about Queensland's place in the nation and Queensland's place in the world. I have to say that when I woke up yesterday morning and found that Lawrence Springborg might be the new leader of the Liberal Party, I thought that was a pretty interesting place to start. Queensland actually has a very long and distinguished history in Australia for the creation of new political parties. Of course, the Australian Labor Party was born here, and you've all seen some of the issues recently around the Tree of Knowledge, perhaps not so honourably. One Nation was also born here, as have other political parties from time to time. And who knows, it may be our destiny once again in the very near future to see the creation of another new Conservative Party in Australian politics, and I'm sure we'll all be watching with a great deal of interest. But I'm not going to talk about the other side of politics today. I want to talk to you about what I think is the great story unfolding here in Queensland. It is a story, I think, about a new Queensland, today's Queensland, that is leading the nation and very proudly taking its place as a force to be reckoned with within our region and on the international stage. A Queensland which, in a nutshell, is not the Queensland that it used to be. Our state, I think it's fair to say for generations, has been known as a nice place to visit for a week or two, somewhere great to soak up the sun, visit a theme park and lay on the beach. Our tourism industry was and is still central to our place in the nation, our place in the region and in the world. But increasingly, it's joined by much stronger industries in our traditional areas of strength, including agriculture and mining, as well as today's emerging industries, to build one of the strongest economies in the nation. While tourists continue to flock here, and we welcome them with open arms and want to see more of them coming from all over the world, the real picture, I think, beneath that story is that increasingly the visitors who come here are coming here to stay, whether they're bringing businesses here, whether they're bringing their families, or both. Queensland, firstly, where are we in the nation and the world? Firstly, I think it's fair to say that we are one of the leading economies in our region, and we are certainly the leading economy in the country. We have rightfully taken our place as what Mary described as the engine room of Australia. It's easy to see that as an exaggeration or a boast, and I know that some of my counterparts, including John Brumby, from time to time wishes we'd stop saying it. But it is, on any measure, simply a statement of fact. We are an economic powerhouse and we are driving what is happening in the rest of the nation. A very cursory glance of the indicators will tell us why business leaders, why investors and developers from all parts of Australia and overseas are increasingly looking to Queensland for new opportunities. When you consider that Australia's economic growth rate of 2.8% is regarded as strong compared to the rest of the world economy, the result for Queensland is exceptional. We are currently experiencing the most sustained period of growth and prosperity ever recorded in our state's history. And our economic growth rate this financial year is forecast to be over 4%, easily eclipsing the national figure. Queensland has just over 19% of the nation's population, but to the March quarter we created 39% of the nation's jobs. Whichever way you look at it, creating 39% of the jobs with 19% of the population is punching well and truly above our weight. Employment in the year to March grew by 1.5% and our unemployment rate remained unchanged at 5%. That's in stark contrast to the 10% unemployment rate that we inherited when we formed government in 1998. Something that at that time was only dreamed of, but the sustained position I think shows that we now really are the nation's jobs generator. We are delivering more than our fair share to the nation's economy. We are what is keeping Australia's jobs engine purring. Of course, when you look at what that means for us in the region, it means that we are now, and have been for several years, attracting extremely high levels of business investment right here in Queensland, with several multinationals setting up shop here in recent times, including IBM, Boeing, Virgin Blue, Oracle, Bechtel, P&O Ned Lloyd, Microsoft, just to name a few. Not to mention the very substantial investments that are very hopefully coming our way in the near future from companies that were mentioned earlier, such as Chalco, looking at the Aurukun bauxite lease. Major projects and investment in something like the PNG gas pipeline, I think, is an interesting reflection on what's happening here in Queensland, that if you think of something like that is really on a scale of something like the Snowy River Hydro Scheme, and particularly in a state like Queensland with our relatively small population, really probably only 10 or 20 years ago it would have been unimaginable that anybody other than a government could have contemplated a project of that scale. It is now obviously so attractive to, given what's happening in the industrial strength of Queensland, it is now a very attractive proposition for major private sector players to invest in. Globally, Queensland is increasingly a force to be reckoned with. In 2004-05, the $159 billion Queensland economy was bigger than New Zealand's at $134 billion, bigger than Singapore's at $143 billion, and slightly bigger than Malaysia's at $158 billion. So if you think about where we are positioned in our region, as a state rather than as a nation, we are competing very, very strongly with those other countries. In turn, our export trade performance is outstanding, and it's got a lot to do with some very forward-thinking infrastructure. We are linked as a state to the world by world-class air and sea infrastructure. We have 15 trading ports, more than any other state and territory in Australia, and we have 3 operational airports, once again more than any other state or territory. These are our key gateways to the world, the gateways for our grain, cotton, beef, fresh produce, coal, and of course increasingly other minerals. These links, I think, cannot be overstated when you contemplate where we are positioned in our region and in the world. 1 in 5 jobs in Queensland depends on exports, and we certainly plan as a government to continue to support a very strong export strategy. We don't believe we will continue to see the levels of growth that we are now taking for granted unless we continue to see companies willing to grab the opportunity that overseas markets provide them with, and we will continue to invest in the infrastructure that's necessary to give those companies the best chance of getting their product to market, getting their product into the international arena at the most affordable and efficient price possible. We are increasingly a supplier, particularly of energy and resources, to our region and to the world. In the 5 years to 2005, Queensland outperformed the rest of Australia in terms of overseas goods exports, with the state recording 21.1% growth in overseas goods exports compared with 15% for the rest of Australia. I should say that in the latest data, in the first 9 months to the 31st of March this year, that is in the first 3 quarters of this financial year, Queensland's overseas goods exports increased by 40.5% compared to the same 9 month period in the previous year. So you can see exponential growth happening, and it's happening very quickly. This increase is nearly double the national increase, which is standing at about 20% over the same period. So Queensland is now the fastest growing exporter of goods and the largest overseas goods exporter in the country in this financial year. I think in that context it would be pretty easy for us to sit back and continue on that path, effectively riding on the coattails of a resources and commodities boom and to ride on the coattails of population growth. But what we really need to do, and what our government is determined to do, is to continue to broaden our export base and to broaden the base of our economy. Our mineral and agricultural sectors are, as you know, the backbone of a very strong export performance, but we are starting to make some really strong inroads into overseas markets with an increasing number of knowledge-intensive exports. Over the decade 2004-05, Queensland's high and medium-high technology manufactured exports grew by more than 110% to $1.74 billion, and most of that growth has happened in the last 5 years. International education exports, where we are selling our education to young people, particularly from all around the world, but particularly Europe and Asia, has grown from less than $300 million in 1993-94 to $1 billion. So it's more than trebled in a decade in the 2004-05 year. The dynamics of globalisation now see four of Queensland's top five export destinations located in Asia. They are Japan, South Korea, China and India in order, and our fifth largest destination now is the United States. What's interesting about that top five is our strengthening relationship with China. In the past 3 years, China has jumped from the fifth position as a trading partner to the third. I don't think it takes much to imagine where they might be in a very, very short period of time. Our Asian markets have provided an excellent opportunity for Queensland's exports, but there's no doubt that they've also created many challenges. Reductions in trade barriers and the globalisation of the economy have exposed many of our state's industries to much more intense competition, particularly in our manufacturing sector. Manufacturing has been one industry particularly affected in all Western economies by globalisation, and you only have to look at the goods here in our supermarkets to see the influence that particularly China and India are having. How can we maintain a strong economic growth and build our society while successfully dealing with these major challenges will be one of the ways we determine our future. We are, as I said earlier, an energy and resource provider increasingly, and China's coal industry is one of those areas that we are playing a major part in. Chinese coal industry is currently being restructured. The central government is encouraging coal mines to develop clean coal technology, which we in Queensland are also working hard to develop. China's coal mining sector has been in the spotlight since 2003, when electricity shortages hit many Chinese regions, including Shanghai and Zhejiang provinces, and mine fatality rates were up 350 times higher than those in the Western world, numbering some 6,000 deaths a year. China needs coal for power, they want clean coal, and they're responding to their fatality rates. Given that we are a trusted, reliable and quality supplier, we are ideally placed to capitalise on the ongoing boom in China. At present, coal exports to China represent only a little over 3% of Queensland's total coal exports, but we note that the figure is growing by 61% a year, so it's up to $1.2 billion this year. The Australian figures are similar, and ABARE projects that China's coal imports will increase by about 12% a year for the next 20 years. So any of our businesses who are either in the coal industry or are in part of the supply chain in or around the coal industry, if you contemplate what 12% growth a year means for any business, what it means in this industry, and that's a relatively conservative estimate, I think, is continued very, very strong growth and continued strong investment. Other areas for cooperation at this time are in the manufacture of high-efficiency coal mining equipment and services. Increasingly, there are major Chinese coal companies who are coming and working with Queensland companies and with some of our researchers to forge some new partnerships around improving the safety, the efficiency, and the profitability of China's own coal industry. For example, John Finlay Engineering are about to commission one of the largest coal washeries ever built in China, and Longwall Associates from Mackay have been successfully exporting armoured face conveyors and other equipment to Chinese mines for the last 4 years. If you have a look at where some of our value-added prospects are in the coal industry, it's not just a matter of us exporting our raw material, but increasingly our expertise in dealing with that raw material. I said earlier that Queensland for a long time has been considered a place to come and visit, and that more and more people are thinking of staying once they come and make that visit. And increasingly I think part of our place in Australia and in our region and the world is a place to live and a home and a place to work. We are experiencing phenomenal historic population growth. There are unprecedented new arrivals coming to Queensland wanting to call our state home. Late last year the Queensland population topped the 4 million mark. By 2027, it's predicted that we will overtake Victoria as the second largest state in the country. So within the next 2 decades, we anticipate being the second largest state. Our population is projected to rise by a further 46% to 5.3 million by that time and 78% to 6.5 million by 2050. It's been predicted that within the next 15 years, 7 in every 10 Australians seven in every 10 Queenslanders will live between Coolangatta and Hervey Bay. When you think about what that means, it's really about changing the shape of our state and to some extent changing the shape of Australia. The other piece of data which I find interesting is a prediction that by the same time, within 15 years, one in four Australians will live between Coffs Harbour and Gympie. So again, it's about a significant shift in where the population of this country is moving to and where the services, where the products, where the goods will be demanded from. People are coming into Queensland at a rate of over 1,500 a week. They don't all come from interstate. Last year, more than 17,000 new permanent residents arrived here in Queensland, and that's about 15% of the total number of migrants who come to call Australia home. I think it's easy to predict that it won't be very long before we see that percentage of overseas migrants coming to Queensland significantly grow when you think about where the jobs and opportunities are. Not only are the figures continuing to rise, but the profile is changing. The question of who these people are and the demographics is changing very much from what I think was once a very strong, probably a reality, but certainly a very strong stereotype. I think mostly people still think that the people who move to Queensland are predominantly Victorians who are retiring, who are no longer in the workforce and are seeking a nice warm place to spend their retirement. About 70%, however, of our newest citizens from interstate are aged between their late teens and their mid-30s. So this is actually a very young demographic that's now moving here. Most of them have families, and most of them, just on 64%, come from New South Wales. So that's a very, very strong population shift out of New South Wales and into Queensland. 25% of them are professionals, including engineers, lawyers, etc. 12% of them are people who have some trade qualification. So that put together shows you that we've still got a majority of the people who are coming here not necessarily in the higher skilled categories. Regardless of their background, they all have one thing in common. They're hungry for jobs and they have high needs for services. They are predominantly first and second home buyers. As I said, they are predominantly have families. They are looking for hospitals, schools, and communities to live in. Most of them are opting for the southeast corner, but many are also opting for regional Queensland. Queensland is bucking the national trend with increases in population in the regions, particularly in central Queensland, again, largely driven by a resources boom, but also by what's happening in and around that boom in our regional centres. Queensland, I think, can also say that one of the roles we play increasingly in Australia and in the world is we're more than a place to get a job and somewhere to live. We are increasingly, I think, seen as a laboratory and a think tank for innovation. Many people who are coming here are drawn here because in the national scheme of things, we are doing some pretty interesting work. Several years back, again, I think that we would not have been recognised for much of what is now happening. But several years back, we recognised that the future will be captured by those economies who have a very long-term look to the horizon and those economies that are constantly searching for opportunities. In other words, economies that are based on investment in science, in skills, in research and development, in innovation and in education. It's our view that that is what is driving the economy of Queensland and what will continue to drive our future prosperity. It is at the heart of what we call our Smart State agenda. But I think it's important for people here to know that increasingly we are seeing much of the investment that we have put into research institutes, much of the investment we've put into our universities are now starting to pay off. We are seeing, we've seen the establishment of 32 joint business and university cooperative research centres, which are all driving innovation in areas such as agriculture, fisheries, forestry, mining, satellite communication, environmental management and medicine. In fact, of the 71 cooperative research centres around the country, 42 of them are in Queensland. We've also established a range of programs to support Queensland firms that want to commercialise their ideas, including the Australian Institute for Commercialisation, high technology incubators and some early stage funding schemes. We are beginning to see in our universities and in our research institutes people moving here from other states and other parts of the world. We believed that if we invested funds into world-class infrastructure and world-class research facilities, and we invested funds in the development of new ideas, that ultimately those who were our best and our brightest from Queensland would stay here and keep their ideas here and generate activity in our economy, but also that if we invested in this sort of infrastructure, that people from increasingly other parts of Australia and the world would want to come and be part of it. And in so doing, we could create critical mass. That is what we're doing, and we're starting to see it in many, many places. Just one example, I was out at the Queensland Institute of Medical Research, QIMR, many of you will know it. It does a great job opening a new floor of their building recently, where one half of the floor is taken up by an entirely new research team led by a woman professor from Sydney, Emily Whitelaw, and she not only came here after 14 years at Sydney University, but she brought her entire research team of 10 PhD graduates. And the opportunity for her to establish her own laboratory in her own area of work in an area that will not only generate significant medical research, but potentially very, very important products for world health, is just one example of what's beginning to happen here, and one that I think in the not too distant past would not have been something we would have contemplated. I could talk to you all day about the great things that are happening in Queensland, but I wanted to outline just in brief where I think we are in terms of an economic jobs generator and a very strong economy, powerful, attractive place to live in and to move to, increasingly seen as an innovator, taking our research, our products and our ideas to the rest of the country and the rest of the world, as well as providing the rest of the country and the rest of the world with significant resources and energy. But I think it's important for me, in my position, and for many of the people in this room, for us to keep asking ourselves the question, how do we stay ahead of the pack? How do we maintain the position we've got, and how do we improve it? How do we maintain the momentum that started to be created, particularly in the last 5 to 10 years? As I said earlier, it would be easy to ride the coattails of a resources boom, easy to ride the coattails of what's happening in the construction industry as a result of population growth. But we think that if we do that, that we will fail the expectations that the state legitimately has of maintaining this momentum. Clearly, I think there are some big challenges for us. The sort of activity that I've described only happens if you've got the infrastructure needed to underpin it. And there is no doubt that this government and any government of Queensland at the moment, along with the private sector, are going to be chasing our tails from time to time to keep up with the demand. We have a very ambitious infrastructure program. Many of you will be aware of the South East Queensland Infrastructure Program, which has been revised from a $55 billion investment to a $66 billion investment just last week by the Premier. There's some interesting data from BCI recently, which showed it's not only public sector money that's driving much of this. The most recent forecast from BCI showed that there is a combined $13.1 billion in private and public money that's been earmarked for Queensland building projects. Our closest competitor in that is New South Wales with an expected spend of about $3.7 billion. If you look at Queensland's $13.1 billion out of the national $25 billion in these sorts of major building projects, you'll see that Queensland's total spend on major construction projects at the moment in this financial year is expected to be more than every other state and territory combined with our private and public investment. In Queensland last year, the Queensland government will spend $8 billion on infrastructure projects across Queensland. It is an extraordinary investment, and as you would all be aware, in order to get that infrastructure delivered, to get it delivered within a reasonable time and within budget, we need to make sure that we are able to access the skills that are needed and the workforce that's needed. And most of the competitors, or many of the competitors for that, are in this room or in some of the industries that I've talked about today. So infrastructure is one that we are paying, which is really at the forefront and the centrepiece of our agenda at the moment. Similarly, skills has to be, and the attraction of skilled labour, it has to be one that we keep a very, very firm eye on. The one thing I hope the people in this room are familiar with the white paper that we introduced on skills earlier this year. It's a $1 billion investment in new training places. It's new facilities across the state to provide more training opportunities for Queenslanders who are here. But we know we've actually got to do more than that. We've got to bring people who have got higher skills than the ones who are currently coming here to Queensland. I did just want to acknowledge that one of the things we're doing is a joint project with APM Newspapers, and I think APM Executive Robin Grundon is in the audience today, so I just wanted to say that one of the things we're doing with APN as a government is taking a proposal to New South Wales. I'm happy to say, Greg, it's not only Victorians that we go down and annoy from time to time. We're, APN is holding a major expo in the western suburbs of Sydney in August. It's called Queensland Live, Work and Play. It has a very, very firm focus on promoting to the people of Western Sydney, the prospect of moving to regional Queensland to live and to work. So many people know there are jobs here. What they don't know is what it might be like to live in Gladstone or Rockhampton or Mackay or any of those regional centres. So this expo is a very aggressive and cheeky attempt to go down there and to say to the people of Western Sydney, perhaps when they're feeling the most miserable about the Western Sydney, about that New South Wales weather, that there are great opportunities, a real improvement in lifestyle, lower cost of living and jobs if they are prepared to make the move. So I'm looking forward to working with APN. It's a first. We haven't done something like this before. We don't know if it'll work, but we're prepared to try anything because we think that we can't stay still on the skills agenda. As much as we're going to put resources into training our own, we've got to be out there aggressively marketing Queensland as a place for skilled labour to be. One area that I wanted to just briefly touch on is the importance of maintaining efficient and affordable costs of energy and water, that how important we understand the utilities sector is to maintaining the economic growth that I've outlined. I hope that the people in this room understand that our willingness last year to bite the bullet on making our electricity industry fully contestable in the retail sector, in the domestic retail sector, was a recognition of the importance of creating competitive markets for those resources. Our recent decision to sell the retail sections of Energex and the contestable retail arms of Ergon and the gas distribution business of Energex is a reflection of our willingness to constantly review how the operation of our government-owned corporations and our willingness to bite the bullet and make the tough decisions when they need to be made. These aren't always easy decisions for governments, but we are determined to make sure that our government-owned corporations are operating as effectively as they can. And as the shareholding minister in every one of our government-owned corporations, can I say it's been an interesting 12 months watching how they operate and contemplating how we could in the future make them as effective and commercial and competitive as possible. In conclusion, I think the real challenge for us to maintain our position in Australia, to maintain and to grow our position in the region and the world, is one where we have to continue to build on our traditional strengths. That is, we have to continually look at our areas of agriculture, mining, manufacturing, and work to make sure that we are utilising the most cutting-edge technology to take those industries to the top of the world, wherever we think that can happen, to increase their ability to export and to ensure they have the infrastructure necessary to get their product to market. Increasingly, though, we also believe it's about building new strengths, building on our traditional strengths, but building new strengths in new and emerging industries, whether it's aviation, the marine industry, biotechnology, biomedical research. We are going to continue to have a focus on building some strengths in those areas. We know that we have to continue to equip our people, not only equip them with the skills and the education they need to grab the opportunities that we're trying to create and in turn for them to actually create those opportunities, but also to equip them to be part of a very rapidly changing world environment and to work with the community to grapple with some of the very difficult issues that are going to face all of us in the future. And right at the top of that agenda, I think, are issues around climate change. Queensland is going to get hotter, it's going to get drier, and issues such as water are not going to be easy. We believe we have to accept the challenge to drought-proof Queensland. We cannot expect to see the continued growth and the continued strength in our economic performers that I've outlined unless we are able to provide adequately with affordable electricity, affordable energy and affordable water and accessible water. So you've seen some of the issues that our government's grappling with in relation to water. Again, we're not going to shy away from the need to tackle that. They're not going to be easy political issues, but we need to bring the community with us, and you'll see us talking to the community about water over and over again to make sure that they are understanding of the decisions that we will have to take. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that Queensland is poised at the moment to be the leading economy in Australia and to stay there for a very long time if we get the settings right. We are increasingly a major player in our region, and our building relationships with China and India, I think, will position us way ahead of a number of our other states to be one of the leading relationships, if you like, that those countries have with Australia. And increasingly, our links into Europe, our links into the former Eastern Europe, our links into the United States, particularly in areas of research and development, are ones that will build, that will certainly stand us in very good stead as our economy diversifies to grapple with some of the challenges of the 21st century. So I think it's a great place to be at the moment. I think it's an exciting opportunity that we've all got in front of us, and I look forward to working with people around this room to make the most of it and to make sure that all of those challenges I described, when I look back in 5 to 10 years' time, I can say we met all those challenges. Now we've got new ones and we're going to meet them as well. Thanks.